Welcome to the Biohacking Superhuman Performance Podcast. My name is Natalie Nidham. I'm a nutritionist, a human potential and epigenetic coach, and I created this podcast to bring you the latest ways to take control of your health and longevity. We cover it all, from new technology to ancestral health practices, personalized interventions, and a very special interest of mine, peptides. Enjoy the show.
Hey folks, welcome back to the show. Today's episode is with a repeat guest, Sean Wells. He is the king of supplement formulations. This man is a genius, not only when it comes to creating new formulas, but when it comes to discovering amazing new compounds or more efficient, effective versions of existing compounds. This is his second time on the show. And you know, when we bring somebody back, it's because they were so awesome the first time. We just had to have them back because they're doing still more amazing things. Now, before we launch into the episode, of course, I want to thank you for being here. I'd love to encourage you to go visit my website, natnidham.com, and sign up for the newsletter, because that's how you can keep abreast of all the new things that I'm coming across, as well as all of the different events that I'll be speaking at live this spring. And there's a number of them. So who knows, maybe our paths could cross this spring at one of these phenomenal events. There's the Women's Health Summit in Sarasota at the end of April. There's Hack Your Health at the end of May in Austin, Texas. And then there's the Health Optimization Summit in London in June. So three events, three different places, lots of different opportunities to meet up. Okay. Also, if you're loving this show, and if you particularly love this episode, please make sure to share it with your friends and your network, anybody who you think would get value from it as well. And last but not least, if I could ask you, if you're feeling inspired, to take a second and leave us a review on whatever platform you're listening to this episode on, because that is how we ultimately get seen by more people and are able to find even more amazing guests to bring you in the future. All right. Before we jump into the episode, we want to thank our sponsors. And our first one is Body Bio. And what I want to talk to you around Body Bio about today is I want to talk to you quickly about butyrate and its unique role in gut health. Now, butyrate is what's known as a short-chain fatty acid, a metabolite created by your gut microbiome to support a healthy gut lining and keep those tight junctions between the cells in your gut sealed up instead of leaky. Now, butyrate also feeds the colonocytes in your colon. Now, as you've no doubt heard, a leaky gut or a damaged lining of the colon is one of the first precursors to chronic illness. So we want to keep that gut lining nice and stable. So crucially, butyrate also supports a healthy metabolism and is a natural promoter of GLP-1. We've all heard that term, which regulates blood sugar balance and ultimately helps people to maintain a healthy weight. This means that butyrate can also be an incredible ally for those who struggle with blood sugar swings and even cravings. Now, our microbiome is often not fully balanced. We're not making enough butyrate. We can be a little down. And this is why we need to find a good, solid, bioavailable butyrate supplement. And I get my butyrate from Body Bio because I know that their manufacturing process is top notch. They never add any extra fillers or junk to their supplements. Plus, they're always giving us the most bioavailable form of whatever supplements. So to get yours, head on over to bodybio.com and you can save 15% off your order with code Natalie at checkout. And that's on anything in that store. That includes the Body Bio PC oil that we've talked about a lot, that phosphatidylcholine, which is amazing, or even Tudka for liver health. They have amazing stuff in there. Okay. In this episode of the Biohacking Superhuman Performance Podcast, I speak with Sean Wells, all about mitochondrial health, its effect on our life's energy, as well as some of the supplements that can help support mitochondria. Supplements, compounds like berberine, dihydroberberine, as well as metformin, which I know can be a little controversial to some people, but all of these show positive effects on the mitochondria, and we dive into the research and benefits behind each one. Now, Sean's a really interesting guy. We've kind of become sort of friends in the industry, and he's such a kind, incredible person, and he's been on a really incredible journey himself. Sean is known as the world's greatest formulator. He's a biohacktivist who overcame significant obstacles with his own health, weight issues, depression, autoimmune conditions, two cervical disc replacements, as well as even a pituitary adenoma. His health journey has led him down a winding path that has required him to not only research Sign Best Solution, but they've also sparked his personal passion for biohacking in every way. We even talk about stoicism in this episode and how, you know, all these stresses in life can ultimately make you stronger. We'll have the link to the previous episode that we recorded together, or you can also find his book, if you don't already have it, The Energy Formula at energyformula.com. To learn more about Sean, you can obviously go to that website, energyformula.com. He's got a website, seanwells.com, and you can follow him on Instagram at seanwells. He posts amazing content there. All right, one more sponsor we want to thank before we jump in, and that is Beam Minerals. And these are perfect to energize your body and boost performance. These minerals are the key to unlocking your full energy potential. Just like your house needs electricity to function, your body relies on minerals to power every major system. Low minerals mean low energy and low performance. It's kind of like living with a partial electricity supply. Don't settle for a bodily blackout. One shot glass of B minerals every day is all it takes to turn the lights back on. You can experience a surge of energy that revitalizes essential systems, promoting faster healing, clearer thinking, and optimal functioning. I can't go a day without these things. So give your body the minerals it craves and watch as it performs at its peak. Get 20% off by going to beamminerals.com and using the code NAT20. And now let's jump into the episode.
Hey folks, just a quick reminder that all of the information presented in this podcast is for information purposes only. No medical advice, no diagnosing, no treatments suggested here. Before you try anything that you hear about or learn about here, make sure that you check with your medical provider.
Sean Wells, welcome to the show. It is such a pleasure to have you back.
Hello, it's good to be on.
Yeah, it's been at least 2 years since we conversed on the podcast. The last time was when your book was coming out.
My book.
Remember that?
I have like a, your book. I was sent like a ornament from the publisher of my book, like a mini version of my book.
I love it. Oh my God. Guys, for those of you who are listening, it's like your little Christmas tree ornament. It's the best. Do you decorate your Christmas tree with it?
I will this coming year. I'm going to put it. Maybe I'll even replace the star with this.
And with that, the energy formula, 100%. Listen, why not? It's got the word energy in it. That's what it's all about. So Sean Wells, the world's greatest, bestest, and most accomplished formulator, you are the man that is going to take a cute little molecule, say, yeah, that's kind of cool, but what if we could get it to do this? What if we could make it better? What if we could make it so that people needed to take less of it and less often and get more benefit, which is that magic that you do. And then we get presented with these beautiful things like dihydroberberine or paraxanthine. Yeah. I mean, before recording this, I was thinking, wow, you know, what a cool brain you have that you can sit there and go and look at things and go, yeah, that's kind of cool. And it could kind of be better. And I think we can make it better. And then you do. It's so cool.
Well, thank you. Thank you.
Well, you're welcome. So, you know, I don't want to lead with necessarily the compounds because we were just talking about it, like, because compounds are great, but too often I find people get really hung up on saying, I want to take that supplement, but they don't necessarily know why, and they don't know what problem they're trying to solve. And those of us in the in this health space have heard so many times, oh, I tried that. It didn't work. I'm like, okay, well, why were you taking it? What were you expecting it to do for you? And are you sure you were taking enough at the right time? And was it the right thing to be taking? So let's back this up and turn the ship around and talk about one of the problems that we see in the world that get you thinking about the things that you think about. And, you know, we were just talking about the title of your book, which is The Energy Formula. We talk about energy. And if we're going to talk about energy in the human system, we cannot do it without talking about mitochondria.
Absolutely. So yes. And I mean, here's the thing. Behind metabolic dysfunction is mitochondrial dysfunction. So we're at 87% of the United States population is metabolically dysfunctional. And that means like bordering on type 2 diabetes, obesity, blood pressure issues, renal dysfunction, et cetera. But I mean, primarily you can just look straight at blood glucose and insulin. And of course, there's all kinds of effects. Once you have dysregulated blood sugar and dysregulated insulin, then you also have inflammation issues, oxidation issues. You have telomere shortening. You have mitochondrial dysfunction that's exacerbated. It can be like kind of the cause of and downstream effect of the metabolic dysfunction. So yeah, there's all kinds of shortfalls of energy. And so the mitochondria, which we're told is like the powerhouse of the cell, is an organelle in the cell that produces adenosine triphosphate, this high energy phosphate system that creates, it's the energy currency for the body, if you will. And this is how we have the energy, not just for ourselves, but the energy to live life, the energy to be vital. And when there's a shortfall of that energy, it's called insufficient cellular energy states, ICE. And you do get all of these clusters of pro-aging, pro-disease scenarios. And disease is not genetic in nature. It's metabolic in nature. So like cancer, PCOS, Alzheimer's, coronary heart disease, these are all metabolic diseases. So that means that we can do something about them. And we don't have to be in a shortfall of mitochondrial energy. We don't have to live tired. We don't have to be in these states where we don't have enough energy to live vibrantly. And so like we can't battle disease. We can't energetically move throughout our lives if we have this shortfall of energy. In the brain, it's called brain energy gap. But it's the same idea. There's not enough energy. And that's when you get not only chronic fatigue syndrome, but hypertonic muscles. You get all these inflammatory conditions, like, you know, these kind of autoimmune conditions, like in the guts and all that stuff. That's what's cropping up. And behind that is that mitochondrial dysfunction. Behind that is metabolic dysfunction. So,
yeah. Well, you said something really interesting there in the brain. And I wonder how much, because we are seeing so much in the way of mental health issues right now. Mm-hmm. And, you know, quite apart from the fact that the world is becoming a very stressful place in general, that brain energy gap mm-hmm. has got to be playing a role as well in a lot of the mental health issues that we're seeing. Like, it's awfully hard to be resilient and mentally happy when you just feel like you're running on fumes all the time.
That's a great point. Absolutely a legitimate point. So when we look at depression, we do see that there's a greater brain energy gap. We do see that there's mitochondrial dysfunction. We also see that BDNF is lower in a depressed brain. We see that neurotransmitters are lower in a depressed brain. And we see that essentially cognitive resilience is lower in the brain of a depressed brain. And that is highly correlated to BDNF as well. Because BDNF is the ability for the brain to take on new neural tasks. But if we take a step back and understand why the body would do that, with depression, it makes sense. Like if you're in a traumatic situation, or at least the body is perceiving it to be, because you can be creating it, whether it's present or not, right? You could be reliving it. Yeah. Then the body is saying like, we don't want to feel as much. So we're going to turn down BDNF. We're going to turn down the neurotransmitters so that we're not perceiving as much. So you literally will not smell as much, taste as much, see as bright of colors, feel as much. And the body's trying to do what it can to spare you from the intensity of what you're experiencing. And so that's
so interesting.
Yeah. That's literally what's happening.
Yeah. I've never heard it put that way. And that makes a lot of sense. Like everything the body does typically is to protect you.
Yeah.
You know, and I think it's why there are people who are dealing with a lot of illness and they'll come out the other side and they will say, my illness was a gift. somehow.
Yeah.
And they will find that silver lining, which seems ridiculous to so many other people, going, well, you know, there's no silver lining to this. And they're going, no, actually, you know, my body was doing this to protect me and to help me to learn and understand and to move through whatever process was necessary.
There's always the lesson. There's a lesson in everything. And I believe that the universe is always working on our behalf. So absolutely, that's the idea of stoicism. That's the idea of mental resilience. And it's been shown that the more mentally resilient you are, the more physically resilient you are, or vice versa. Like if you're doing a lot of cold plunges and hot saunas, you'll be able to deal with more mental stress. And if you have a more stoic mind, a reframing mind, if you've studied NLP and you're good at reframing situations, you'll be better at dealing with physical stress. And so absolutely, that's the idea of, if you're a good reframer, then you can be in states of more eustress, where positive stress or hormetic stress that is actually growing your allostatic capacity, which is your stress bucket, so that you have a greater capacity to deal with more stress.
Yeah. Yeah. So maybe for people who aren't as familiar with some of these concepts, and we're going to do a little bit of a definition game right now, because we've talked about a few things that some people may not be familiar with. And I'm going to go back a couple of topics and say, and bring up BDNF, brain derived neurotrophic factor. Yeah. So people might be scratching their heads going, what was that BDNF thing he was talking about a minute ago? And then we're going to talk about stoicism. So let's start with BDNF and then we'll move on.
So
to the next
BDNF
one.
Is a protein that's associated with neuroplasticity. And probably the most popular one that's being talked about right now, NGF, is also nerve growth factor, as well as mTOR, which is associated with protein synthesis that most people think of with muscle. Rightly so. Muscle is very important in longevity. I'm sure you've discussed that quite a bit. But BDNF is probably the hero of the day, I think, so to speak, when people talk about neuroplasticity. And so when you talk about the brain cells, which are neurons, you're talking about not only protecting those existing neurons, but creating new neurons. For a long time, we thought that you can't create new neurons as an adult. But if BDNF levels are high enough, you absolutely can. And some ways that you can have higher levels of BDNF are a number of things. So this is going to be, one, challenging yourself. Now, this is related to that kind of stoic idea. So can you take new ways to work? Can you take on a new language? Can you learn a new instrument? Is it harder now than it was when you were a child? Absolutely. But should you continue to challenge the brain and protect that brain that you have? Yes. This is really important. Putting your belt on the opposite way, brushing with the opposite hand when you brush your teeth, all of these things, anything that's kind of like difficult, instead of shutting you down, just say, look, I accept that this is harder than it is for others, but I'm going to take this on. And when you're taking on that task that's difficult, whatever it is, like I'm going to play pickleball, I'm going to, you know, like learn to ride a scooter or whatever it is, it will transfer into other aspects of your life. You will have greater ease at learning other things. This is like the idea that they've shown that when you're someone that exercises, you can learn an instrument easier, you perform better at school. When you're someone that, you know, takes these music classes, you perform better in math. You know, using other aspects of your brain, challenging yourself, will create a more dynamic brain and a more vibrant life.
Love it. No, it's such a good point. And it leads to that, to the concept, you know, for people who are truly in committed to longevity and health span, like living a long, healthy life into their 60s and 70s and 80s and 90s, is that idea of never stopping learning and never stopping growing, right?
Yeah.
I'm definitely past 50, and I'm surrounded by people who are like, oh, I can't wait to retire. And my first question to them is like, awesome. What are you going to do? What are you going to do when you retire? Like, do you have a plan? Do you have other interests? Do you have a plan to learn something? Because, you know, this whole idea of I'm going to retire and sit around and I get to do whatever I want and watch TV and eat bonbons and do whatever. It's a dangerous road to travel.
100%. The goal should be to never retire. The goal should be, can I seek things that I enjoy more? Can I apply myself at things I enjoy more? What is the path to things I'm passionate about, but I'm certainly applying myself? If you do not have purpose, you will die. This is one of the reasons that I believe that typically I used to work in nursing homes and probably 85 to 90% of the populace was female. Because I believe in that last generation that men, their whole purpose revolved around work. And when they retired, shortly thereafter, they died. Men traditionally were not good at sharing and connecting like women are. Now, women, again, last generation, this isn't referring to what's happening now, which I have mixed feelings about, as we all should.
A whole other world. Yeah.
Last generation, when women were like matriarchs of the home, they had purpose at creating a home and being the matriarch of the family of several generations. They connected with other women in the community. They were involved in church, involved in the PTA, and they had deep relationships and they had purpose until the day they died. Whereas men, it's like we're told our whole lives, like, what do you do? 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 It's like that's the measure for us. And so I would find that typically men don't make it as long. And I think because of the quality of relationships that they lack, especially once they leave work, and then their whole life is based on work. And so it is important when you look at like ikigai and like some of these Japanese concepts around purpose and passion, that that's what really is correlated to longevity. So you need to find your purpose and continue to have your purpose and find your passion. And I encourage anyone listening to look up the concept of ikigai. It's like, do what you are passionate about, do what you're good at, do what you can get paid for. It's like kind of the kind of convergence of all these concepts. And in the center is this idea of ikigai. But that's really important. And when we look at like blue zones, we also see the same thing. We see people that, again, they one, slow down. Two, they live usually near the ocean. Three, they eat pretty healthy diets. They prepare it themselves typically. It tends to be a little bit more Mediterranean-ish. But the biggest things to me is that they have community and connection, and they have purpose and passion. And those things are really critical. I could, like, all the peptides in the world, all the, you know, HRT, all the, you know, stem cells and blah, blah, blah. We're not out right now. We're not outliving the people that are in Sardinia or some of these other places that could be smoking and drinking and doing all these other things, but they have purpose. They have passion. They have connection. Yeah. They slow down. They're not going, they're not like a slave to the clock. They're not stressed all the time.
Yeah. 100%. You bring up such a good point. I brought this up on another podcast recently. I said, you know, you go talk to any of the centenarians right now that everybody's kind of celebrating. I don't think any of them really thought about living to 100 ever. They just did, right? They're not doing, to your point, there's no HRT. They're not optimizing their testosterone levels. They're not worrying about, you know, their physique or their body composition or whatever the case may be. They are not using peptides. That's for darn sure. Unless if they're eating a lot of organ meats, you're getting them there. But, you know, these are people doing exactly what you just described. And for the for those of us living in the current environment we're in, where it's not as easy necessarily to reproduce what those guys are doing, I think we would be well served to keep an eye on those aspects that you talk about that are the intangibles that really are such a big piece of the fabric of what creates that landscape in which you can live a long, happy, and healthier life. So it's great sidebar to our conversation. So, okay, so stoicism. Do you want to define that for us a little bit before we move on to the next thing? Because we're going back to mitochondria, guys, just so you know. But
The Stoicism goes back so far, but I love like modern Stoicism, like Ryan Holiday has like a number of great books, Ego is the Enemy, but really he encapsulates it in the title, The Obstacle is the Way, which is a great book. That is the concept. We shouldn't wish for shortcuts. We shouldn't wish for no obstacle. The obstacle is the actual way. We grow stronger through the stress. I can tell you that there's no one that is successful. I have four companies. I am a very successful person, very accomplished person. And I can tell you, I have been through absolute hell in my life. There has been a lot of sacrifice, a lot of pain, a lot of mental anguish, physical anguish. And it's taken me a long time to figure out those things and try and achieve some balance as I'm, you know, as I was approaching my mid 40s and certainly now as I'm about to hit 50. It's not easy. I can tell you anyone that is Steve Jobs, Elon Musk, like Jeff Bezos, I can tell you right now, these people have suffered. Yep. Suffered. And so just know that, you know, the obstacle is the way. And, you know, whoever you admire in sports, Michael Jordan, Tiger Woods, whatever, these people, I mean, you know how messy their lives are. And sometimes when you're really successful at something, it can be really messy, especially at other things in your life, right? There's, you know, you can't maximize all the bars, so to speak. Like if, you know, financial relationship, like, you know, hobbies, you know, spiritual, physical, mental, you can't be good at all of them all the time. So this is the difficulty that the obstacle is the way. There will always be stress and hardships. Don't tell yourself like, look, I'm going to do this when things ease up. Because it's not ever coming. There's always going to be stress in one of those bars. So you need to like be a resilient mind. And yes, you need to acknowledge when things are difficult and sit with it sometimes. And also move through it and say, this is going to make me stronger. This is working on my behalf. There's lessons here that I'm learning. This is the idea of hormesis. And even in the mitochondria, it's known as mitohormesis. And even with plants, it's known as xenohormesis. When plants get challenged, that's the idea of like dry farms wine and, you know, some of these grapes that are in super arid climates like Texas, let's say, like where we have grapes, are they going to be as sweet and fruitful and flavorful? No. But they're going to be higher in antioxidants because those are surviving MFers. Right? They're dealing with stress on a higher level. They're getting exposed to more heat, less moisture, more sun. It's difficult to survive. And we find this in plants that are at like very high elevations as well. So this is the idea of hormesis. Stress is making you stronger. Stop avoiding stress. Stop seeking the lazy path, seeking the path of ease, and accept that this is my path to grow stronger.
I love that. That's, I mean, it's such a great point. And it doesn't mean that there, you can never have ease, but I think I, you know, because there will be times in all of our lives where we enjoy those smooth times, right? There'll be ease and you want to, and even in difficult times, there might be parts of your aspects of your life where you can have ease. But I think your point is so powerful in that, you know, it's that whole Stoicism kind of reframing thing where look at your challenges, sit with them, acknowledge them, and then figure out a way, how are we going to move past this? And, you know, that whole expression, this too shall pass, is part of this whole, I mean, and it's true. Like if we, for most of us, if we look back in our lives at difficult periods that we went through, it passed.
Yeah.
Right? Eventually we move through it. And sometimes the outcome isn't what we would have predicted. It might not even have been what we thought we wanted. But one way or another, we got through it, we learned from it, we grew from it, and we move on to the next thing. So that's a really great point. Thank you for that. And seeing as you mentioned mitohormesis, let's get back to our little friends, the mitochondria, and talk about, you know, helping them to be strong and resilient and provide us with that foundation of energy that gives us systemically the energy and mentally the energy to kind of move through and past and all this stuff.
Yeah. And some of these like AMK activators, which are very well known for longevity, people have also argued like this is berberine, my ingredient dihydroberberine, as well as the drug metformin, which has been used in anti-aging, probably the most established drug in anti-aging for the last 30 to 40 years. It's been used for that purpose beyond just diabetes. And they've even shown even normoglycemic, you still benefit from getting it lower than that and lowering insulin further than that. There's longevity benefits. So it's not just about a normal blood sugar. There's deeper things that
but a lower, right?
Yeah. So
let's talk about that a little bit, because you know the number of people who bring me their blood work where their doctor has given them a green, like a gold star next to their blood sugar levels of 5.6, 5.8, like, you know, you're fine. Mm-hmm. So that's Canadian numbers, which translates into whatever 5.6 times 18 is.
Yeah.
So it's over 100. And can we talk about what are those optimal blood sugar numbers that we're trying to get to, and that maybe using something like whether, and I'd love you, because I've seen some beautiful infographics you've done on social media about metformin and berberine and dihydroberberine. So I'm going to let you loose and let you dig into that whole thing, because that, I just think that's really fascinating. And people, we need to cut through the crap right now. We need to help people to understand what the deal is.
Yeah. And the blood sugar, the blood glucose response from insulin is not a bad thing. It shouldn't be villainized or demonized. The thing that happens is, if you can like minimize it, then you can be in more states of higher growth hormone, higher autophagy, and then even, again, another mitochondrial term, mitophagy, where you're cleaning out the mitochondria. You're essentially detoxifying and cleaning out the mitochondria. Then, you know, that is going to be a situation where anti-aging is going to be at its greatest, because when you have these growth hormone, but growth factors are going to be elevated in these scenarios. So this is the idea behind, like, let's say we've seen with animal models in the ketogenic diet that some of these rodent models are living 30% longer. Does that translate to us living 30% longer? Probably not. But it's still relevant. And when we look at C. elegans worms, it's similar. But also when we look at fasting, right? So it's the same idea. When you're fasting, which is maybe you don't need to fast if fasting is kind of overwhelming to you. One of the best ways of fasting that I will put out there, that I will assert, is avoiding snacking. Start there.
Yes.
That's the type of fasting you need to do. You know, maybe you can talk about the woman's physiology, especially when she's in a period of fertility and premenopausal, that you may not want to go down the path of extended fasting. You can do like a 16 and 8. But look, the best place to start is going to be avoiding snacking. And this idea of like eating small meals throughout the day and all this stuff, this means that you're never in elevated states of growth hormone. You never have suppressed insulin. You never have elevated growth factors and autophagy and mitophagy, and are helping with cellular senescence and all these kinds of methods of reducing aging, anti-aging. Like, so it really, to me, is something that we should maximize, is reducing snacking, increasing fasting, being in states of glycogen depletion. Look, this is one of the easiest hacks I have for you. Is one, the reducing the snacking, but two, it's called a postprandial stroll. So after you eat, I'm not saying, look, if you're 50, 60, 70, 80, you're not a big exerciser. You never see the gym. You know, you don't know what CrossFit is. Cool. Like, do this for me. You will have a massive impact on your health, your longevity, and your blood sugar. After you eat, immediately after you eat, walk for 10 or 15 minutes. Walk. I didn't say sprint. I didn't say do like jumping jacks. I didn't say do box jumps. I didn't say clean and jerk. I'm saying walk, if you can briskly walk, for 10 or 15 minutes, and it has a massive impact on your blood glucose.
Hey guys, quick message. If you're transitioning into the spring and looking for a little extra something to kickstart your season, I strongly recommend adding nitric oxide support from Berkeley Life to your daily supplement stack. It's like nitric oxide helps to extend my energy throughout the day. It gets and keeps my blood flowing, helps me through my workouts, and improves my focus. I love stepping into the day feeling energetic, engaged, and mentally ready to juggle a full podcaster schedule, and then some. I always take my nitric oxide before I go to the gym. Now, as a listener of this episode, I know how hard you work to feel and perform your best. You don't want to leave anything on the table. So to get yours, go to berkeleylife.com. Make sure to use code NIDDBL to get plugged into the power of nitric oxide. That code NIDDBL will give you 10% off your first order and free shipping. Let's get back to the show.
You know what? If you look at the blue zones, that's what they do. That's the Mediterranean way. You look at some of these countries, they go for a walk. They go for a walk after dinner. They go for a walk after, you know, they just go for a walk. They might walk to work. I mean, at a certain time, they may have walked to work. But as we're seeing more Western lifestyles kind of move into those places, we're seeing a reversal of the benefits of their lifestyle as they're moving away from their natural way of doing things. And that postprandial walk, like I, you know, just the other day, I had my lunch and I knew I had like 3 hours of work to do and there was no way I was going for a walk. So a few months ago, I bought a treadmill to put under my desk. I got a standing desk. So, you know, I mistyped a million different words, but I walked.
There you go.
Whoever got an email from me, there were a ton of spelling mistakes, but I walked. Okay, so that's a great point. So let's talk about where the berberine, dihydroberberine, metformin kind of come in as helping us. As assistance, right?
Yeah.
And one thing I would love you to address is berberine. There's a narrative out there that speaks to berberine as because it has antimicrobial effects as possibly being a negative on the microbiome. And is that a myth? Is there some truth to it? Or do we need to just let it go?
So this is like yes and no. And this is kind of what I was – actually, I didn't finish my thought. So thank you for bringing that back around because this is something that I was going to say about this is that idea of mitohormesis, that we've seen that berberine, metformin, dihydroberberine, they actually cause mitochondrial stress. And so some people are like, well, then it's not anti-aging. Oh, hold on. It is for that reason, because it is causing mitochondrial stress. It actually ultimately causes mitochondrial biogenesis. So it's increasing the number of mitochondria and ultimately your cellular output of ATP. So this is a really tremendous effect of berberine, dihydroberberine, et cetera. Plus, we're lowering blood glucose through not only the AMPK pathway, but also, if you're a big fan of semaglutide and other things, berberine, dihydroberberine are GLP-1 agonists as well. And so, yeah, which is really cool. So we're seeing blood glucose get lowered. We're seeing it have a positive effect on mitochondrial health. Yes, there's data points around berberine getting used to improve the gut microbiome, as well as some people say it can worsen the gut microbiome. One of the things that I like about dihydroberberine is it will bypass the bioindividuality of the gut microbiome, so that usually at the gut level, berberine is converting to dihydroberberine. But the problem is, depending on your gut microbiome, there can be GI distress from that, and there can be a high degree of bioindividuality on that conversion. So when we bypass that, sort of like giving someone the active version of folate, right, like 5-methyl tetrahydrofolate, or, you know, the MTHFR gene and all that, this is kind of that same idea where you're bypassing that. So now you're moving past the microbiome. So what I see quite often with the microbiome, and this is where I actually kind of believe more in prebiotics and postbiotics over probiotics is I allow the body to be fairly intelligent. But there are certain prebiotics that can essentially exacerbate a dysbiotic gut. Mm-hmm. If you're not in a state of probiosis where it's a positive gut microbiome, you're essentially just feeding bad bacteria. And I found that to be the case. It seems like with the feedback I've gotten around berberine, that if you're kind of in a dysbiotic gut, I think you need to straighten out your gut. And then it can be more of like probiotic in nature, in a positive direction. But to me, I really like avoiding berberine and just going straight to dihydroberberine.
Yeah, no, that's a really good point. And the other nice thing about dihydroberberine is you don't need to take quite as much of it. You don't need to take it as often because you're getting the final product, right? Because when we're dosing berberine, we're taking 500 milligrams three times a day in the hopes that we make as much dihydroberberine as you need.
Right.
Whereas with the dihydroberberine, is it like 150 milligrams twice a day?
Exactly. It's not only higher bioavailability, but it lasts longer in plasma. So you can take it less frequently. So yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Win, 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 win. talk to me a little bit about metformin, and then we'll talk maybe about some of the, like, you know, we were talking about he's a client of yours. He's a good friend of mine who, you know, goes shopping at the buffet of Sean every once in a while and comes up with these crazy formulations that are just really effective, right? Cause he's tapping into, like, he's just sitting there going, all right, Sean, what do you
he
got?
Loves How are we going to put this together? But look, you know, to his credit, I mean, I make a lot of these ingredients. And I've talked to him plenty, but to his credit, he is spending some money on those formulas. Those are very expensive, like literally three or four times the price of a normal supplement product. And they may cost.
Yeah. He's not very dusty.
But when they cost three or four times as much, he's not making a lot of margin on those. I'm telling you guys, if you check out Healthgevity, those are some super high-end formulas that you just don't get anywhere else. No one has the cojones to like spend that kind of money on a formula. They're very
100%.
So as far as metformin, you know, one thing that's really interesting about the drug, before it was really used for diabetic purposes, before that it was actually used for flu. This is back in like the late 1800s, early 1900s. Yeah. So what's really fascinating about this is I get to thinking about the relationship of our immune system and our blood glucose/insulin and metabolic function dysfunction. And we all know related to the vid and all that we went through over the last 4 years and are still going through, quite honestly, as it kind of weaves away and evolves and gets blended into the soup of everything else. You know, it's having an impact on the world. I don't know that maybe pandemic was accurate, but it's definitely, I mean, I've had it about four times myself. So it's not like even a healthy person can escape it, especially when I'm, you know, I travel the world. Like I've been, the first day I got in China when they opened it up, I got it. Like, and no surprise, right? But what's interesting is, and you know, maybe I should have thought about this at the time because I'm not always on all these various supplements. I'm kind of testing other things and trying to do them scientifically. So I'm not taking massive concoctions of everything all the time. But that, you know, metformin, as well as I would extrapolate berberine and dihydroberberine, could have a massive impact on a number of these immune conditions and our susceptibility to some of these viruses. So that is something that I've really been looking into and exploring.
Interesting. So for you, metformin, because metformin is one of those things that people come to blows over on Instagram.
Oh, like are you talking related to like around training and stuff like that? I can talk about that. There is some legitimacy to that idea around AMPK, that you it is somewhat like catabolic in nature, but that isn't a bad thing. We're constantly cycling between anabolism and catabolism, like buildup and breakdown. And if you're in a constant state of buildup, it's called cancer. So like, you don't want to be away from that. And it's not a bad thing. Even when you're trying to build muscle, it's not a bad thing. And as we know, berberine, dihydroberberine, metformin, they actually help with body composition and nutrient repartitioning. It's going to preferentially store that blood glucose in muscle rather than fat. So in terms of body composition, it's ideal. In terms of muscle gain, there may be some level of impairment, especially if you're not training at higher intensities. You don't have a lot of growth hormone or testosterone. This to me, if you're like an 18 to 25 year old male, like throw this out the window. But if,
don't even worry.
If you're someone that like putting on muscle is a lot harder for, like someone who's my age or, you know, your age or what have you, then it can start being a little bit more of a concern. But all I would do is just space the timing away from your workout. So you take it twice a day. Like, you know, if you're, I don't know, if you're training midday, then take it, you know, first thing in the morning, last thing in the evening. Or you know, if you're training in the evening, then take it, you know, the two times before, like at, you know, breakfast and lunch or, you know, something like that. That's the way I would work that. But I don't think there's really a massive impact that I've seen. But if you're really concerned and you're taking very high doses, I mean, look, if you're getting your blood sugar down, that's going to help through and through regardless.
So 100%.
I guess if you're more like aged, you know, aren't exercising intensely with resistance training as much, you have lower androgens, and you're taking high doses of, you know, berberine or dihydroberberine, maybe. But I think it's really exaggerated.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. I think I think that the arguments that go on completely disregard the nuance and the ability of the body to weave in and out of states, and we need to weave in and out of those states. We need to have mTOR up sometimes. Yeah. We need to have MK up, MK dominant sometimes.
Yeah. See,
the body does that. Like, it's not going to allow you to melt all your muscle just because you're taking berberine or metformin. Like, it's just not going to happen.
That's a good point. So around the idea of like rapamycin and like inhibiting mTOR at some points, like that was confusing to people. Like, hey, like, you know, muscle longevity, mTOR all the time. Wait, why is it we're seeing with mTOR inhibition, people live longer? Well, it's both, right? And like, you can like take those breaks. You can do that detox and cleanup and autophagy and all of these things, growth hormone repair, like during these periods of time, like that rest and digest parasympathetic states. And what's going to happen when you don't always have mTOR elevated is that you're going to improve protein utilization and actually have better anabolism when you do have protein. Because the body gets very efficient at saying, well, there's tons of protein coming in. We're always in a state of like upregulated mTOR. We're just going to oxidize the hell out of this protein. We don't need it. So, you know, that's a secret there is actually what I would call is protein cycling. This is like calorie cycling by fasting. This is like carbohydrate cycling, you know, to be dual fuel and metabolically flexible. I like the idea of being flexible and cycling everything.
100%. I'm right with you. Feast and famine. Mm-hmm. And you just apply it to everything.
Resilience, right? Baby.
That's resilience. You got to be able to skip a meal without chewing your arm off or hurting the person next to you. Okay, cool. So we have a few more minutes. There's one other compound that I've been using of yours that I mean, look, I love all your stuff, but let's just say, and I know a lot of it because I use a lot of healthgevity supplements, but there's this little secret weapon called paraxanthine that you actually handed me a test tube of capsules and you're one of those guys. You run into Sean and if you're a friend of Sean's, he'll hand you something and say, here, try this and let me know what you think.
Yes.
And you kind of go, okay.
So I am someone who is, Regarding the CYP1A2 gene, I am a slow metabolizer of caffeine, as is the majority of the population, around 60% of the population. Yep. And not only that, there is a Goldilocks zone where I really feel like fast metabolizers are not ideal either. These are the people that, while they don't get the side effects that a slow metabolizers do, they really don't get the benefit because they're such fast metabolizers that they adapt too quickly, and it's kind of an increasing dose that they need to actually get any efficacy. Mm-hmm. So these are the people that have caffeine and can go straight to sleep. So I believe there's about 20% of us that are actually in that Goldilocks zone of ideal caffeine metabolism. So that's a very low number. And I was looking to solve that and continue to get energy myself. That is the title of my book, The Energy Formula, after all. And I did bring T-Crine and Dynamine out to the world, which are very popular as far as stimulants go as well, and much better profile than caffeine as well. But I was looking at caffeine metabolism, and theobromine is largely ineffective. Theophylline is side effect ridden. But paraxanthine is really where we're getting the majority of the benefit from caffeine. And the majority of caffeine is actually converted to paraxanthine. So now you might say, well, why would I need paraxanthine? That's a great question. Because when you're a slow metabolizer, it can take days to get to that full conversion of caffeine to paraxanthine. Plus, caffeine itself has all the side effects and toxicity the slower metabolizer you are, and you're running into theophylline, and you're running into its metabolites. And so what we see is a greater, cleaner experience that's free from the side effects. Plus, we are seeing way more benefits. We're seeing increased BDNF, increased nitric oxide to the brain, increased glutathione and catalase, decreased oxidative stress, decreased beta amyloid plaque. When we tested athletes on a 10K race and we gave them essentially a multitasking test, which was really a task switching test. There's no such thing as multitasking. Sorry, women, if you've heard the myth of women are better at multitasking. There's no such thing as whatever. Multitasking.
They just suck less. They're not good at it.
Yeah. So it's really about task switching. And yes, I believe that men tend to have like a more focused behavior. Versus like women that kind of can flex more. I agree with that. So I think that's kind of the sentiment, but ultimately no one's really multitasking. Anyway, at the end of this test, at the end of the race, they took this test again, and the caffeine users had dramatically increased mental errors. Now, they did have more stimulation and more energy for the race, but they had dramatically increased mental errors. The paraxanthine group had decreased mental errors. So they actually performed better at the test after the 10K race than they did before the test because of the paraxanthine. So they did have stimulation, but they were more in a flow state, while the caffeinated people were more in a frazzled state.
Huh. Who needs to be frazzled? I don't need to be frazzled. No. I don't think I've had caffeinated coffee. I think I gave up on coffee, like caffeine. I love my coffee. I drink decaf every morning because I like the taste and the smell and the experience and the whole nine yards. But I gave up caffeinated coffee probably 10 years ago. But this paraxanthine business, I just love it. Us slow caffeine metabolizers, we use caffeine, like, you know, a lot of the pre-workouts have caffeine in them. So they give you that buzz and you think you're going to go to the gym and you're going to crush it. And maybe you do, but there's a cost to it because there's that vasoconstriction effect and it's not that good for you, especially if you're a slow caffeine metabolizer. But if you're sidestepping the chattering teeth, and like I once had this brilliant idea before a CrossFit workout that I would soak a fig in double espresso and then I would eat the fig and... Yeah, it was quite a workout. Whoa. I'm pretty sure I lost. It was pretty intense. I didn't do that too often. But be that as it may, getting the paraxanthine in, I'm actually, because I do take very often before my workout, I'll use a troche, like a methylene blue troche that's got like just maybe, I think it might have 10 milligrams of caffeine, like an infinitesimally small. And I used to take half, so I used to maybe get 20. Now I take 10. Mm-hmm. I take my paraxanthine with it. And I'm way happier.
There you go.
Life is just life just opens up.
Yeah. And also, plus, I didn't mention, we see about a 50%. So the nitric oxide thing we do not see in caffeine. We do see about a 50% greater dopaminergic response than we do on caffeine as well. And we do see acetylcholine and serotonin elevated too. So it really has like an impact on mood as well as the neuroprotection around neurodegeneration, like with Parkinson's and things like that. I mean, I'm extrapolating that out. I'm not saying it cures that or anything, but essentially that revolves around a lack of dopamine.
Right. Yeah. No, this is great. So, you know, so not that we're plugging anybody in particular, but if you were looking for paraxanthine, one of the places you could get it from is Mike's Brain Boost Plus. Okay. I'm sure there's other people using it as well. Yes. I just don't know their products.
Yeah, the branded name for it that I came up with was Enfinity, Enfinity. So like infinite energy, Enfinity.
And we'll see it
in a number of products out on the market now.
Yeah, you gave it a name. Good for you. Mm-hmm. Good for you. Because paraxanthine's a mouthful.
Yes. And it has an X. And a lot of people, I think that's going to be a Z. But it's an X where that Z sound comes in.
Okay. Cool. Amazing. All right. Well, we've traveled. We've been to some places on this podcast. What else do we want to talk about?
So I'll give you one last thing. My new ingredient that just hit the market, dileucine. Oh. It is a dipeptide of leucine. So about 15 years ago, I was studying the transport system of amino acids in the gut. And what is fascinating, and this has a lot to do, by the way, Natalie, on I believe, peptide signaling, why the gut actually has a faster delivery of di and tripeptides through this PEPT1 transporter than it does single amino acids. This doesn't make sense, that single amino acids should get to blood plasma faster because they're in their smallest form than di and tripeptides, which are 2 or 3 amino acids long.
Which are bioregulators, by the way.
Right. And so what we're seeing is this PEPT1 transporter takes up those di and tripeptides faster, like 185, 189% faster. So why is that? And so I had this theory about, well, what if we took leucine, which is known to be this muscle protein synthesis trigger? What if we did a dipeptide or tripeptide? I looked at both. And what would that look like? And so what we saw is there's about 60 to 80% more muscle protein synthesis. And it's regardless of whether you dose leucine higher or not, there's actually a refractory effect. So you can't make leucine go faster, essentially, no matter how much you give it. So it's not really dose dependent. It's speed dependent. And so this is where dileucine has a dramatically better effect over leucine. And leucine was thought to be the gold standard for muscle protein synthesis. And that's now been upended with my new ingredient. So we're doing a lot of research around training, obviously. But we do believe there's some actual positive effects on the brain, going back to the idea of mTOR as well. Like we're seeing some signs in rodent models that is the case. So actually those two ingredients, when we tested about 50 different ingredients in rodent models and preclinicals, we found that the two best synergists, this is crazy because they're my ingredients, were actually paraxanthine and dileucine. And I do believe that the reason this is because, one, paraxanthine increasing BDNF and a lot of brain function. And then there's the mind-muscle connection. And then, there's the recruitment of muscle, the anabolism of muscle, but then also there's the mTOR effect in the brain. And then, of course, blood flow, which we see through nitric oxide with paraxanthine, could help with recruitment of muscle. There's just so many, it's really fascinating what we're seeing in terms of the combination of the two. But certainly, I think a really also interesting combination could be dileucine affecting anabolism and then something like HMB affecting anti-catabolism. And then you're really skewing things in the favor of like net muscle accretion or net muscle growth by tipping those scales, like with both inhibiting muscle protein breakdown and increasing muscle protein synthesis. So that's a really exciting area that we're exploring as well.
So that'll be a new formula coming your way at some point in the future.
Probably.
I love it. It's kind of, you know, when you were talking about it, I was imagining like when you're playing a pinball game and you hit one of those places where the ball just starts bouncing between two places and all the things start to light up on the board. And it's like, you know, when you kind of in the lab, you put together these two things and all of a sudden 20 things start to happen. And that's kind of cool.
Heck yes.
That's got to be a good day at the lab.
Exactly. And there's more things coming, of course. I'll keep you posted.
Of course. Of course. There's always more. There's always more. Sean, thank you so much. This has been super fun. And he's holding up, just so you know, for those of you on YouTube, you get to see it. For people listening, you don't get to see it. He's holding up his little energy solution. What did you call it?
It's an ornament. It's an ornament.
His ornament. And then you're going to have to start sending those out to people so they can, you know, start taking pictures of it in their car and like in different places. and then they get a, you know, a test tube of your newest stuff to try out.
Yes.
So Sean, thank you. This has been so fun. It's been a pleasure. And let's not wait 2 years to do it again.
All right. Sounds good.
Oh, wait, before we go. Yeah. Where can people find you?
Okay, cool.
How could I possibly do such a thing?
Sean Wells, S-H-A-W-N, S-H-A-W-N-W-E-L-L-S, at Sean Wells on Instagram. Lots of great content there. Infographics, pathways, stacks, all those things. SeanWells.com. I have my newsletter that's free and has tons of information, all the studies I'm breaking down. And then energyformula.com is where you'll find my book and hidden chapters and recipe books and guides and all kinds of things. It's obviously available on Amazon as well. It's softcover, hardcover, Audible, and ebook. But I have a lot of extras if you go to energyformula.com.
Nice. I love it. It's great. But it's like a little encyclopedia. Whenever you get, you know, you're looking for something to do, you go find it. You just randomly open it up somewhere and learn something new. Anyway, thank you so much again, Sean.
Thank you.
Have an amazing rest of the day.
You too.
I really appreciate your time. Take care. Hey guys, before we wrap up today's episode, I want to thank everyone who has left a 5-star rating and a review for the podcast. If you haven't yet left a rating and review and you love this episode, I would so appreciate it if you did. Each and everyone truly helps the overall growth and success of the podcast, which allows me to continue to bring you more episodes and helps me to help more people to optimize their health and longevity. All you have to do if you're on Apple or on Spotify is open up Apple Podcasts or Spotify and take 2 seconds to click your rating and leave even just a 1-word review. Thank you so much for your continued support and for tuning into today's episode. If you have any questions about the episode or any questions you would like me to answer on the podcast, always feel free to reach out on Instagram at Natalie Nittam. I wish you all the best this week in biohacking your superhuman performance.
Thanks so much for joining me on this episode of the Biohacking Superhuman Performance Podcast. If you enjoyed the show, please remember to leave us a 5-star review on iTunes because that's what helps us to be heard and to be seen. If you'd like to connect with me directly, or if you'd like to leave any comments, or if you have any questions about this episode, please reach out to me directly through my website, natnittam.com. And of course, if you're not already a member of the Biohacking Superhuman Performance community on Facebook, that's where you'll find me every day. It's a short application. Just answer a couple of questions and you're in and interfacing with other amazing biohackers. Thanks again, and we'll look forward to seeing you on the next episode.